Scarlet heard a battle cry, followed by a heavy thud. Snarling, she lowered her trembling arms. In the center of the cavern, two forms tangled with each other, jaws snapping, blood dripping over taut muscles. Eyesight blurring, she managed to ease in a breath, glad to feel her chest expand. Reaching overhead, she gripped the statue and tried to pull herself up, but the muscles in her back screamed at her. Clenching her jaw, she worked on tucking her legs under her and battled against the pain until she could stand, panting and sweating against the bronze goddess. If she could just get away before the brawl was over. Ran pulled the other man into a headlock. The opponent's glowing emerald eyes pierced Scarlet for one heart-stopping moment before he flipped Ran over his head. The ground vibrated from the impact, but Scarlet barely felt it. Wolf. It was Wolf. Chapter 40. Ran rebounded onto his feet, and he and Wolf sprang apart, each straining against unburned energy. Scarlet could almost see it, simmering and seething beneath their skin. Wolf was covered in gashes and blood, but he didn't seem to notice as he stood slightly hunched, hands flexing. Ran bared his fangs.
"Return to your post, Ran,"
Wolf said with a snarl.
"This one is mine."
Ran snorted in disgust.
"And let you embarrass me, embarrass our family with all your newfound sympathy? You're a disgrace."
He spat a glob of blood onto the broken concrete.
"Our mission is to kill. Now stand aside so I might kill her, if you're not willing to do it yourself."
Scarlet glanced behind her. The staircase was low enough that she could climb over the railing, but her body ached just thinking of it. Trying to shake off the helplessness, she struggled to crawl to the edge of the fountain.
"She is mine,"
Wolf repeated, his voice tinted with a low growl.
"I do not want to fight you over a human, brother," Ran said,
though the loathing etched into his face made the endearment sound like a joke.
"Then you will leave her. She was left under my jurisdiction. You should not have abandoned your own post to come for her." "She is mine!"
Wolf's temper flared, and he swiped at the nearest candelabra, tearing the bronze arm from the wall. Scarlet ducked as it crashed to the floor, sending wax candlesticks hurtling into the fountain's basin. They both remained in their hunched stances, panting, glaring. Finally, Ran snarled.
"Then you've made your choice."
He pounced. Wolf batted him from the air with an open palm, swiping him down onto the fountain wall. Ran landed with a yelp, but quickly rolled back onto his feet. Wolf lunged, digging his teeth into Ran's forearm. With a cry of pain, Ran swiped his sharp nails down Wolf's chest, leaving crimson gouges. Unlocking his jaw, Wolf backhanded Ran across the face, sending him reeling into the fountain's statue. Scarlet screamed and stumbled back against a column at the base of the stairs. Ran attacked again, and Wolf, expectant, grabbed him by the neck and used the momentum to throw him overhead. Ran rolled gracefully onto his feet. They were both panting, blood soaking through their shredded clothes. They paced, waiting, hunting for weaknesses. Again, Ran made the first move. He threw his whole weight at Wolf, tackling him to the ground. His jaws went for the neck, snapping, but Wolf held him off, hands wrapped around his throat. He grunted beneath Ran's weight, struggling to avoid the dripping fangs, when Ran dug his fist into Wolf's shoulder, the bullet wound from Scarlet's gun. Howling, Wolf curled his legs to gain purchase and shoved Ran off him with a kick to the stomach. Ran rolled away, and they both staggered to their feet again. Scarlet could see their energy dissolving as they stood, wobbling, gazes flashing murder. Neither moved to cover their wounds. Ran swiped a bare arm across his mouth, streaking his chin with blood. Wolf crouched and sprang, shoving Ran onto his back and landing on top of him. A fist clawed for him. Wolf ducked, catching the brunt of the damage on his ear. Pushing his opponent into the marble, Wolf raised his face to the ceiling and howled. Scarlet forced her back into the column, petrified. The howl resounded off the walls and through her skull and joints, filling every empty space in her body. When he stopped howling, Wolf dropped down and snapped his jaw around Ran's throat. Scarlet hid behind her arms, but couldn't bring herself to look away. Blood gurgled up, coating Wolf's chin and neck, dribbling down onto the mosaic floor. Ran shook and jerked, but the struggle was quick to drain out of him. A moment later, Wolf released him, letting the dead body slump onto the ground. Reaching around the column, Scarlet grasped the stair railing and hauled herself up the flight, running, half-limping up the steps. The lobby was still deserted. Her feet splashed through the puddle in the center of the room as she ran for the doors, doors that would lead to the street, to freedom. Then she heard Wolf chasing her. She shoved through the exit. The cool evening air engulfed her as she pounded down the stairs to the empty street, already scanning the open square for help. She saw no one. No one. The door slammed open behind her before it had time to close, and she stumbled blindly across the street. In the distance, she saw a woman running into a nearby alley. Hope flashed, and Scarlet urged her feet to move faster, to fly. She suddenly felt like she could take off and soar over the concrete if she could just reach the woman, just use her port to call for help. And then, another figure appeared. Another man. His gait abnormally fast. He sped into the alley, and a moment later, the woman's terrified scream screeched across the square and was cut short. A howl erupted from the same dark alley. In the distance, another howl rose up to greet it, and another, filling the twilight with bloodthirsty cries. Terror and hopelessness choked Scarlet all at once, and she fell, silt and concrete digging into her palms. Gasping, drenched with sweat, she rolled onto her back. Wolf had stopped running, but he still came for her, prowling toward her with measured, patient steps. He was panting, almost as hard as she was. Somewhere off in the city, another chorus of howling started. Wolf did not join them. His attention was all for Scarlet, cold and sharp and hungry. The pain was clear. The fury was clearer. She scrambled away on her burning palms. Wolf paused as he reached the center of the intersection. He was silhouetted by the moonlight, eyes gold and green and black and seething. She saw him drag his tongue across his fangs, watched as he curled and uncurled his fingers. His jaw worked as if to take in a bigger gulp of air. She could see his fight, his struggle, as clearly as she could see the animal, the wolf, in him, as clearly as she could still see the man. Wolf. Her tongue was parched. She tried to wet her dry lips and tasted blood. What have they done to you?
You.
The word was spat out at her, full of hatred.
What have you done to me?
He took another stumbling step toward her, and she scooted away, pushing at the ground with the heels of her shoes, but it was useless. In the blink of an eye, he had crouched down over her, knocking her onto her elbows without even having to touch her. His hands hit the ground on either side of her head. Scarlet gaped up at eyes that now seemed to glow in the dark. His mouth was ruby red, the front of his shirt black from the gore. She could smell blood on him, on his clothes, his hair, his skin. If it was this pungent to her, she couldn't imagine how it must overwhelm him. He growled and lowered his nose to her neck, sniffing.
I know you don't want to hurt me, Wolf.
His nose bumped against her jaw. His breath caressed her collarbone.
You helped me. You rescued me.
A steaming tear escaped down her cheek. The tips of his hair, wild and messy again, brushed against her lips.
things have changed.
Her heart fluttered like a firefly with a missing wing. Her pulse pounded through her veins, expecting the clamp of jaws on her throat at any moment. But something was holding him back. He could have killed her already, but he hadn't. She gulped.
You protected me from Ran. It wasn't so you could kill me now.
You don't know the thoughts going through my head.
I know you're different from them.
She attached her gaze to the enormous moon over the skyline. Reminded herself that this was not a monster. This was Wolf, the man who had held her so tenderly on the train. The man who had given her the ID chip to help her escape.
You said you never wanted to scare me. Well, you're scaring me.
A growl vibrated against her. Scarlet shivered, but forced her body not to shrink away. Instead, she gulped and brought her hands up to his face. Stroking her thumbs over his cheeks, she placed a kiss against Wolf's temple. His body tensed, and she was able to angle his head back just far enough so that she could see his eyes. His lips curled into a snarl, but she held his gaze.
Stop this, Wolf! You're not one of them anymore!
His brow twitched, but his resentment seemed to fade. His expression held pain and desperation and mute anger, but not for her.
He's in my head,
he said, his voice a rumbling growl.
Scarlet, I can't.
He looked away, face scrunching. Scarlet traced her fingers along his face, the same jaw, the same cheekbones, the same scars all splattered with blood. She brushed her fingers through his wild hair.
Just stay with me. Protect me like you said you would.
Something whooshed by her ear and thudded into Wolf's neck. Wolf went rigid. He looked up, eyes wide and already brightened with bloodlust, but then they grew bleary. With a strangled gurgle in his throat, the strength left him, and he collapsed on top of her. Chapter 41
Wolf! Wolf!
Craning her neck, Scarlet saw a man and a woman sprinting toward her, the moonlight glinting off the woman's gun. Scarlet's terror was short-lived. They weren't crazed Lunars. She returned her attention to Wolf, searching out the dart embedded in his neck.
Wolf!
She yelled again, prying the dart out of his flesh and dropping it to the ground.
Are you all right?
The woman yelled as she got closer. Scarlet ignored her until her own name cut through her panic.
Scarlet? Scarlet Benoit?
She glanced up again as the woman slowed. But no, not a woman. A girl with messy hair and fine, vaguely familiar features. Scarlet frowned, sure she'd seen the girl before. The man caught up, gasping for air.
Who are you?
She asked, locking her arms around Wolf as the two stooped to pull him away from her.
What did you do to him?
Come on, said the man, grabbing Wolf. He tried to pry Wolf away, but she held tight. We have to get out of here.
Stop it! Don't touch him! Wolf!
She gripped the sides of Wolf's face and tilted him back. If it hadn't been for his fangs and the blood on his jaw, he would have looked peaceful.
What did you do to him?
Scarlet, where is your grandmother? Is she with you?
Said the girl. This brought Scarlet's scattered attention back to her.
My grandmother?
The girl knelt beside her.
Michelle Benoit, do you know where she is?
The girl's words tripped over themselves in her rush to speak. Scarlet blinked. Her memory shifted. She did know this girl. Light bounced off the girl's fingers, and Scarlet realized what she had seen before wasn't a gun. It was her hand.
Lynn Cinder,
she whispered. Don't worry, said the man. We're the good guys.
Scarlet,
said Cinder, grasping Wolf by the shoulders to leverage some of the weight away from her.
I know how it looked on the net screens, but I swear we're not here to hurt you. I just need to know where your grandmother is. Is she in danger?
Scarlet gulped. This was Princess Celine. This was the girl they'd been searching for, the girl her grandmother had been questioned over. the girl her grandmother had given everything to protect. Together, she and the man heaved Wolf away, dropping him onto the concrete.
"Please," said Cinder. "Your grandmother?"
"She's in the opera house," Scarlet said. "She's dead."
The girl gaped at her, with pity or disappointment. Scarlet couldn't tell which. Sitting up, she flattened her palm against Wolf's chest, relieved to feel it rise beneath her touch.
"They were looking for you."
Surprise quickly stole away the girl's sympathy.
"Come on," said the man from behind her, stooping and hooking his elbow beneath Scarlet's armpit. "Time to go."
"No, I'm not leaving him!" She scrambled out of his hold and crawled toward Wolf's unconscious body, tying her arms around his head. The strangers gawked at her like she was mad.
"He's not like the rest!"
"He's exactly like the rest," said the man. "He was trying to eat you!
He saved my life!"
The strangers exchanged disbelieving glances, and the girl gave a baffled shrug.
"Fine," the man said. "You take the helm."
He pulled Scarlet off Wolf while the girl grabbed Wolf's wrist and hoisted him up over her shoulder, grunting with the effort. The man skirted behind and grabbed Wolf's legs.
"Holy spades," he muttered, already breathless. "What are these guys made of?"
Cinder started moving toward the opera house at a pace only barely slower than a jaunt. Scarlet ducked in between them, supporting Wolf's abdomen as well as she could as they awkwardly stumbled across the square. Past the woman, the gleaming form of a military cargo ship poked out from the next street. A howl nearly startled Scarlet into dropping Wolf's body. She could not imagine feeling more vulnerable, her arms wrapped around Wolf's torso, leaving her stomach and chest exposed, moving at this snail's pace, sweating, exhausted, in pain, blood oozing down her side.
"You'd better have those tranquilizers ready," the man said.
"Can only put in one at a time,"
the man cursed beneath his breath, then gasped.
"Cinder! Tena!"
There was a snap, and a dart lodged itself into a man's chest on the sidewalk in front of the theater. He had crumpled to the ground before Scarlet even realized he was there.
"Let's pick it up," the man behind her said. "How many more of those do you have?"
"Just three," the girl panted.
"Gonna have to restock." "Right, I'll just head down to the convenience store and..."
She didn't finish, the strain too much. Cinder tripped and they all stumbled, Wolf's body landing on the ground with a thud. Scarlet pulled out from beneath him and her heart lurched to see blood gushing out of his wounds, made worse from the trek.
"Wolf!"
An eerie howling rose up all around them, much closer than it had seemed before.
"Open the ramp!"
the girl yelled, startling the man.
"We need bandages," said Scarlet.
The girl got to her feet and grasped Wolf's wrist again.
"There are bandages on the ship. Come on!"
The man ran ahead, screaming,
"Iko, open the hatch!"
Scarlet heard the clicking of gears and the humming of electricity as the hatch began to open, revealing the welcoming interior of the ship. Pulling herself onto her feet, she just grabbed Wolf's ankles when she saw a man loping toward them at a sprint, his nostrils flaring, lips pulled taut against his fangs. He was one of the men who had first taken her to her cell. A ping, a thunk, as a dart buried itself into his forearm. He roared and increased his speed for two steps before his anger faded and he fell forward, face slamming onto the pavement.
"Almost there," said Cinder through her teeth, picking up Wolf's dropped wrists.
More howling greeted them from the roads and alleys and shadows, great loping figures appearing out of the darkness. Scarlet's back and legs ached, and her palms were slick as she struggled to retain her grip on Wolf's ankles.
"They're coming!"
"I noticed!"
Scarlet fell, crashing onto her knees. She looked up at Wolf's unconscious face, at the panicking girl, and the frustration welled up inside her. She forced herself to stand again, though her legs were no stronger than unbaked dough. Then the man was back, shoving her toward the ship.
"Go!"
he yelled and grabbed Wolf's ankles. Thorn, you're supposed to be flying the ship, you dunce! Scarlet turned toward the ship's open hatch. I can fly! Just get him inside! She ran, though her mind screamed at her for leaving Wolf behind. Her muscles burned, her head pounded with the rush of blood. She could only focus on putting one foot in front of another. Ignoring the burning, ignoring the sharp, stabbing pain in her side, blinking away the sweat. One more step. Something sliced across her back. She heard the rip of fabric, a loud thump, and then something grabbed her ankle. She screamed and collapsed at the bottom of the ramp. Fingernails buried themselves into the flesh of her calf, and she cried out in pain. Whistle, thud. The hand released her. Scarlet kicked the man in the jaw before scrambling up the rest of the ramp, into the gaping hull of the ship. She flew into the cockpit and stumbled into the pilot seat. They hadn't bothered to stop the engines, and the ship rumbled and purred around her. Her motions were automatic. She could barely see for the salty sting of sweat in her eyes. Her heartbeat felt like horse's hooves trampling her chest. But her fingers knew what to do as they breezed over the panel.
Captain? Cinder?
Startled, she spun back toward the door, but there was no one there.
Who's there?
A momentary silence, then,
who are you?
Scarlet swiped the sweat from her forehead. The ship. The ship was talking to her.
I'm Scarlet. We need to get ready for takeoff. Can you? Where are Thorn and Cinder? Right behind me. Is this ship equipped with auto lift?
A series of lights lit up on the panel.
Auto lift and auto magnetic stabilizers.
Good. She reached for the thruster output control and waited to hear the sound of footsteps on the ramp. A drop of sweat slid down her temple. She gulped, harshly, failing in her attempt to wet her sandpaper throat.
What's taking them so long?
Swiveling the chair around, she threw herself toward the cockpit entrance and peered past the cargo bay. Wolf's prone body was laid out not a dozen steps from the end of the ramp, and there were Lynn Cinder and her friend standing back to back. They were surrounded by 7 lunar operatives and the Thaumaturge. Chapter 42. Cinder sensed the Thaumaturge before she saw him, like a snake slithering into her brain, urging her to stop running, to stand still, and be captured. Her right leg obeyed. Her left kept going. With a yelp, she crashed to her hands and knees. The unconscious man, Wolf, nearly crushed her before his body rolled away. Thorn cried out and tripped, barely able to catch himself before falling. Cinder jumped back to her feet and spun around. The men came out of the shadows, from the alleyways, around corners, from behind the ship, each with their glowing eyes and sharp canines bared. 7 in all. She spotted the Thaumaturge, handsome as they always were, with curly black hair and a chiseled face. He wore a red coat, a second-level Thaumaturge. Backing up, she collided with Thorn.
So, he murmured, how many more darts do you have?
The Thaumaturge's dark irises sparkled with moonlight.
1.
She doubted the Thaumaturge could have heard her, but he smiled serenely and tucked his hands into his maroon sleeves.
Right, said Thorn. In that case,
he snatched the officer's stolen gun from his belt and spun, aiming for the Thaumaturge, then froze.
Oh, no!
From the corner of her eye, Cinder saw Thorn's arm curl back, change direction, until the barrel was aimed at her temple instead.
Cinder!
His voice nearly broke from panic. The Thaumaturge's expression remained complacent. Cinder held her breath, stilling her nerves, and targeted her last tranquilizer at Thorn's leg. The thunk made her cringe, but within seconds, the gun had clattered from Thorn's fingers, and his body collapsed motionless on top of Wolf's. A warm laugh spilled out of the Thaumaturge.
Hello, Miss Lynn. How pleasant to make your acquaintance.
She swooped her gaze over the 7 men. They were all threatening, hungry, ready to pounce on her and tear her limb from limb at the slightest provocation. Somehow, she preferred that to the Thaumaturge's gleeful amusement. At least with these men, there was no misinterpreting their intentions. She'd taken 3 steps forward before she realized it. She braced herself and strained to keep her feet still, wobbling for a moment, before finding balance and standing solid on the pavement, at the same time that her bionics picked up on the intrusion. Bioelectrical manipulation detected. Initializing resistance proceed. The text vanished as Cinder regained purchase of her own thoughts, her own body. Her brain was being stretched in 2 directions as the Thaumaturge failed to control her, her own lunar gift fighting against him.
"So it's true," he said.
The pressure released, her ears popped, and she was back in her own head again. She was panting, feeling like she'd just run across the whole continent.
"You will forgive me. I did have to try."
His white teeth glinted. He didn't seem at all put off by the fact that she couldn't be controlled as easily as Thorn had been. As easily as the 7 men surrounding her. Heart skipping, she glanced at the nearest man, one with shaggy dark blonde hair and a scar that ran from temple to jaw. She forced herself to be calm, urged the desperation to subside, and reached her thoughts toward him. His mind wasn't like any of those she'd touched with her lunar gift yet. Not open and focused like Thorne's, not cold and determined like Alex, not petrified like Emily's, not anxious or proud like the military officers. This man had the mind of an animal, scattered and wild and raging with primal instinct. The desire to kill, the need to feast, the constant awareness of where he stood in the pack and how he could improve his station. Kill, eat, destroy. With a shudder, she pulled her thoughts away from him. The Thaumaturge was chuckling again.
"What do you think of my pets? How easily they fit in with the humans, but how quickly they turn into beasts."
"You're controlling them," she said, finding her voice.
"You flatter me. I'm only encouraging their natural instincts."
"No. No person, not even animals, have instincts like this. To hunt or defend, maybe, but you've turned them into monsters."
"Perhaps there were some genetic modifications involved," he finished the statement with another chuckle, like she'd caught him in a guilty pleasure. "But don't worry, Miss Lynn. I won't let them hurt you. I want my queen to have that pleasure. Your friends, unfortunately."
In unison, 2 of the soldiers stepped forward and grasped Cinder by the elbows.
"Take her to the theater," said the Thaumaturge. "I will inform Her Majesty that Michel Benoit turned out to be useful for something after all."
But Cinder's captors hadn't taken her 2 steps when the roar of an engine rattled the pavement. They hesitated, and Cinder glanced back as the rampian started to rise, hovering chest height above the street. The ramp was still down, and Cinder could see the metal vibrating, the storage crates rattling against one another.
"Cinder!" Iko's voice cut through her thundering pulse. "Get down!"
She sank to her knees, hanging limp between the 2 soldiers as the ship surged forward. The lowered platform collided with the 2 men. They dropped Cinder onto all 4s, and she glanced up as the ramp cut through the rest of the soldiers, mowing down all but one who had the sense to dodge out of its way before the ramp smashed into the Thaumaturge. He gasped, his legs dangling as he clung to the edge. Staying low as the belly of the ship hovered overhead, Cinder spun around and scrambled for Thorne's dropped pistol. She waited until she was sure she had a clear shot before firing. The bullet lodged itself in the Thaumaturge's thigh and he screamed, releasing the ramp and dropping onto the pavement. His calmness was gone, his face contorted with rage. The blonde soldier came out of nowhere, tackling Cinder to the ground, sending the gun skidding across the pavement. She struggled to push him off, but he was too heavy. Pinning her right arm to the ground, she swung a punch at him with her metal fist, heard the bones crunch on impact, but he didn't release her. He snarled and opened his jaws wide. Just as he brought his mouth toward her neck, the ship spun in the air, The landing gear took the soldier in his side, throwing him off Cinder. She rolled away, colliding with Thorn's and Wolf's prone bodies. The ship swept back around, its running lights washing over the street. The ramp scraped against the road as it settled back to the ground, not a half a dozen steps from where Cinder lay. Inside the ship, Scarlet Benoit's head appeared in the cockpit's doorway.
Come on!
Clambering to her feet, Cinder grabbed Thorn by the elbow and dragged him off Wolf. But she'd barely moved when a long howl ricocheted down her spine. It was quickly picked up by the rest of the soldiers, the sound deafening. Cinder stumbled at the base of the ramp and looked back. Two of the soldiers were lying motionless, the two who had taken the brunt of the ship's impact. The rest were crouched down on all fours, their faces turned up to the sky as they howled. The thaumaturge, farther away, picked himself up from the ground with a sneer. Though it was too dark to see any blood, Cinder could tell he was favoring the leg that had been shot. Brushing the sweat from her eyes, Cinder focused on the soldier closest to her. She mentally reached out for the bioelectric waves that were rolling off him, frenzied and hungry, and clamped her thoughts around them. One howl was cut off sharply from the rest. A headache was already forming at her temples from the effort required to control him, but she sensed the change immediately, still violent, still angry, but no longer a wild beast sent to rip apart anyone in his path. You. She wasn't sure if she said it out loud or merely thought it. You are mine now. Get these two men on board the ship. His eyes flickered, loathing but restrained. Now! As he moved to lumber toward her, the rest of the howling ceased. Four faces peered at Cinder and the traitor. The thaumaturge snarled, but Cinder could barely see him. Bright spots were dancing in her vision. Her legs were beginning to shake from the effort of keeping herself standing while maintaining control of the man. He grabbed onto Wolf and Thorn by their wrists and began dragging them up the ramp, a puppet under her strings. But she could already feel the strings fraying. Hissing, she fell to one knee. Impressive. The thaumaturge's voice was muffled in her head. Behind her, her pawn dropped Wolf and Thorn onto the cargo bay floor. I can see why my queen fears you, but taking control of one of my pets will hardly save you now. She was so close. Get the soldier out of the ship. Get herself inside. She managed to bring him back to the edge, the very bottom of the ramp, before her hold on him snapped. She fell forward, clutching her temples, feeling as if 100 needles were being jabbed into her brain. It hadn't hurt like this to control anyone else. Had never hurt at all. The pain began to ease. She squinted. The thaumaturge was snarling at her, one arm clutching his stomach where the ramp had hit him. The rest of the soldiers were just standing there, their eyes still glowing but their expressions passive. And it occurred to Cinder that the thaumaturge was too hurt to keep control of them all, that even his hold on them was tenuous. But it didn't matter. She had no more strength. She sank back on her heels, letting her hands fall heavy at her sides. Her body swayed. She could feel unconsciousness calling to her, seeping into her brain. A grin once again creased the thaumaturge's lips, but this time it showed more relief than amusement.
Troya, he said, go in and retrieve Mademoiselle Benoit. I will have to decide what is to be done with Alpha Keth.
His eyes darted past Cinder at the same moment she heard a gunshot. The thaumaturge stumbled back, clutching his chest. Slipping onto her hip, Cinder glanced back to see Scarlet marching down the ramp, carrying a shotgun.
Mademoiselle Benoit retrieved, she said, planting her heel on the back of the dazed, blank-faced soldier and shoving him off the ramp. And don't worry, we'll take Alpha Kesley off your hands.
Sneering, the thaumaturge sank down to the ground. Blood began to dribble out between his fingers.
Where did you get that? Cinder wheezed.
One of your storage crates, Scarlet said.
Come on, let's...
A mix of emotions flickered through her eyes, writhing fury, startled confusion, emptiness. She lowered the barrel of the gun.
Cinder cursed.
Iko, the ramp!
She said, crawling up onto the ramp and collapsing at Scarlet's feet. Reaching up, she snatched the gun away before the thaumaturge could turn it on either of them, and the ramp began to rise, dropping them both down into the cargo bay. An angry scream reached them, and then another chorus of howls that faded quickly away. The thaumaturge's last fading effort to control his pets. Cinder saw Scarlet shaking her head to rid herself of the fog before hauling herself to her feet.
Hold on to something if you can, Scarlet yelled as she hobbled into the cockpit. Ship, engage magnet lifters and rear thrusters!
Cinder sank exhausted onto the floor, still clutching the gun. Moments later, she felt the ship rising up away from the earth and whipping toward the sky.
Chapter 43. Kai was sweating with the effort not to throw up. His eyes stung, but he couldn't look away from the net screen. It was like watching a terrible horror production, too gruesome and fantastical to be real. The vidlink was being transferred from the downtown city square, where the weekly market and the annual festival had been held only days before, the day of his coronation. Bodies littered the square, their spilled blood black beneath the flickering billboards. Most of the corpses were concentrated near the opening of a late-night restaurant, one of the few businesses that had been open and crowded at midnight when the attack had started. He'd been told only one assailant had been in the restaurant at the time, but with the amount of carnage, he felt certain it had to be more. How could one man do so much damage? The feed switched to a hotel in Tokyo just as a man with crazed eyes threw a limp body against a pillar. Kai cringed at the impact and turned away.
Turn it off. I can't watch anymore.
Where are the police?
They are doing their best to stop the attacks, Your Majesty, said Torin from behind him. But it takes time to mobilize them and make an organized attempt to fight back. This attack was so unprecedented, so abnormal. These men move fast, rarely stay on a single block for more than a few minutes. Just enough time to kill anyone within reach before moving to another area of the city.
Torin trailed off, as if he heard the panic rising in his own voice and had to stop talking before it overwhelmed him. He cleared his throat.
Screen, show major global feeds.
Noise buzzed in the room. 6 news anchors reporting the same stories. Sudden attacks, murderous psychopaths, monsters, unknown fatalities, planet-wide mayhem. 4 cities had been struck inside the Commonwealth. New Beijing, Mumbai, Tokyo, and Manila. 10 more had fallen victim across the other 5 earthen countries. Mexico City, New York, Sao Paulo, Cairo, Lagos, London, Moscow, Paris, Istanbul, and Sydney. 14 cities in all. And though it was impossible to gain an exact number on the attackers, witness accounts noted that not more than 20 or 30 men seemed to be behind the attacks at each post. Kai struggled to do the math in his head. 300 men, maybe 400. It seemed impossible. As the death toll continued to rise, as the victimized cities began requesting assistance from their neighbors, shipping their injured to other hospitals. As many as 10,000 dead, some were saying. In the course of not 2 hours, and at the hands of only 300 or 400 men. 300 or 400 Lunars. Because he knew, that Levana was behind this. In 2 of the attacked cities, survivors claimed they'd seen a royal thaumaturge in their midst. Though both witnesses had been near delusional with loss of blood, Kai believed them. It made sense that the queen's most prized minions would be involved in this. It made equal sense that they themselves were removed from the bloodshed, merely orchestrating the attacks through their own pawns. Kai paced away from the screen, rubbing his fingers into his eyes. This was because of him. Levana had done this because of him. Him and Cinder.
This is war, said Queen Camilla of the United Kingdom. She's declared war on us.
Kai slumped against the desk. They'd all been so silent, entranced by the ongoing footage, that he'd forgotten he was still in a global conference with the other union leaders. The voice of Africa's Prime Minister Kamen sounded through the speakers, seething.
First 15 years of the plague, and now this. And for what? Levana is upset that a single prisoner got away? A mere girl? No, she's using it as an excuse. She means to make a mockery of us.
I'm having all of my major cities evacuated immediately, said President Vargas of America. We can at least attempt to staunch the bleeding.
European Prime Minister Bromstad chimed in.
Before you go that route, I'm afraid I have yet more unsettling news.
Kai's chin fell onto his chest, defeated. He was tempted to cover his ears and not listen. He didn't want to hear any more, but he braced himself instead.
The attack is not only in the major metropolises, said Bromstad. I've just been informed that in addition to Paris, Moscow, and Istanbul, we've had one small town attacked as well, Rieux, a farming community in southern France, population 3,800.
3,800, said Queen Camilla. Why would she attack such a small town?
To confuse us, said Governor General Williams from Australia, to make us believe there's no sense to these attacks, to make us afraid that she could strike anywhere, at any time. It is precisely something Levana would do.
Chairman Hui burst into Kai's office without knocking. Kai jumped, for a moment thinking that the chairman was a lunatic come to kill him, before his pulse began to subside again. Any news? Hui nodded. Kai noticed that his face had aged years in the last week.
Lin Cinder has been spotted.
Kai swallowed a gasp and shoved himself off the desk.
What? Who's that speaking? Said Camilla. What about Lin Cinder?
I must tend to other matters, said Kai. End conference.
Sounds of protests were immediately silenced, and Kai focused on the chairman, every nerve humming.
Well? Three military officers managed to track her, using a positive ID on her deceased stepsister, Lin Peony, just like her guardian said we would. We found her in a small town in southern France, minutes before the attack.
Southern?
Kai glanced at Torn, just as his advisor shut his eyes, wearied by the same realization.
Was it a town called Rieux?
Hui's eyes widened.
How did you know?
Kai groaned and rounded to the back of his desk.
Levana's men attacked Rieux, the only non-major city they went after. They must have been able to track her too. That's why they were there. We must alert the other union leaders, said Torn. At least we know she isn't attacking at random. But how did they find her? Her sister's ID chip was our only lead. How else could she be?
He trailed off, yanking both hands through his hair.
Of course. She knew about the chip. I'm such an idiot. Your Majesty?
He spun back toward Hui. But it was Torin that caught his eye.
Don't you say this is paranoia. She is listening. I don't know how she does it, but she is spying on us. This very office is probably bugged. That's how she knew about the chip. That's how she knew when my office was open and she could barge in here unannounced. That's how she knew when my father died.
Torin's expression darkened, but for once, he made no snide comment about Kai and his ridiculous theories.
So, we've found her then, Cinder?
Embarrassment flickered over Hui's brow.
I'm sorry, Your Majesty. Once the attacks began, she managed to get away in the chaos. We found the ID chip on a farm outside of Rieux, next to signs of a ship's takeoff. We're working on rounding up anyone who might have seen her, but unfortunately, all three officers who first identified her were killed in the attack.
Kai began to shake, his entire body burning up from the inside out. He cast furious eyes up to the ceiling, half screaming.
Well, see that, Your Majesty? If it wasn't for your attack, we would have had her! I hope you're pleased with yourself!
Huffing, he crossed his arms over his chest and waited for his blood pressure to drop again.
Enough of this! Call off the search!
Your Majesty,
said Torin.
I want all available military and enforcement officers focused on finding these men who are attacking us and putting an end to this. That's our new priority.
As if relieved by the decision, Hui gave a curt bow and clipped out of the office, leaving the door open in his wake.
Your Majesty, said Torin, while I don't disagree with this course of action, we have to consider how Levana will react. We should consider the possibility that this attack, awful as it is only an annoyance compared to what she is truly capable of. Perhaps we should attempt to placate her before she can do any further damage.
I know.
Kai faced the screen and the muttering, frightened news anchors. I haven't forgotten those pictures that the American Republic had. The memory still sent a chill down his back. Hundreds of soldiers standing in formation, each one a cross between a man and a beast, protruding fangs and enormous claws, hunched shoulders and a fine layer of fur up their broad arms. The men who were attacking all over Earth were vicious and wild and brutal. That much was clear. But they were still only men. Kai suspected they were just the precursor to what Levana's beast army could become. And he'd thought he couldn't loathe her any more. Not after she'd purposely withheld the Letamosis antidote from him, or attacked one of his servants to prove a political point, or forced him to betray Cinder, for no other reason than she'd escaped from Luna years ago. But he could not have fathomed this cruelty. Which is why he would forever hate himself for what he was about to do. Torn, will you give me a moment?
Your Majesty.
Torn's eyes were wrinkled in the corner, as if carved into his skin. Perhaps they'd all aged unfairly this week.
You want me to leave?
He bit the inside of his cheek and nodded. Torn's lips perched, but it seemed a long time before he could form any words. Kai could see knowledge on his advisor's face. Torin knew what he was planning.
Your Majesty, are you sure you don't wish to discuss this? Let me offer guidance. Let me help you.
Kai tried to smile, but it came out nothing more than a painful grimace. I can't stand here, safe in this palace, and not do anything. I can't let her kill anyone else. Not with these monsters, not by withholding the Letamosis antidote, not by whatever she has planned next. We both know what she wants. We both know what will stop this.
Then let me stay and support you, Your Majesty.
He shook his head. This isn't a good choice for the Commonwealth. It may be the only choice, but it will never be a good one. He fidgeted with his collar. The Commonwealth should not be able to blame anyone but me. Please go. He saw Torin take in a slow, painful breath before bowing deeply.
I will be right outside should you need me, Your Majesty.
Looking supremely unhappy about it, Torin left, shutting the door behind him. Kai paced before the net screen, his gut twisting with anxiety. He straightened his shirt, wrinkled from a long day, but at least he'd still been in his office when the alert had come. He believed he might never experience a full night of sleep again after this, after what he was about to do. In his frenzied thoughts, he couldn't help thinking of Cinder at the ball. How happy he'd been to see her descending the stairs into the ballroom. How innocently amused he'd been at her rain-drenched hair and wrinkled dress, thinking it was a fitting look for the city's most renowned mechanic. He'd thought she must be immune to society's whims of fashion and decorum. So comfortable in her own skin that she could come to a royal ball as the emperor's own guest with messy hair and oil stains on her gloves and keep her head high as she did so. That was before he knew that she'd rush to the ball to give him a warning. Cinder had sacrificed her own safety to plead with him not to accept the alliance, not to marry Levana, because after the marriage ceremony was done and she had ascended to the throne of the Eastern Commonwealth, Levana intended to kill him.
He felt sick to his stomach, knowing that Cinder was right. He knew that Levana wouldn't hesitate to dispose of him as soon as he'd served his purpose. But he had to stop these murders. He had to stop this war. Cinder was not the only one capable of sacrificing herself for something greater. Inhaling, exhaling, he faced the screen. Establish vidlink to Queen Levana of Luna. The small globe in the corner turned over only once before it brightened with the image of the Lunar Queen, draped in her lacy white veil. He imagined her face old and haggard and decrepit beneath its sheath, and it didn't help. Kai sensed she'd been waiting for his calm. He sensed she'd been listening in on everything, and already knew precisely what his intentions were. He sensed she was smirking behind the veil.
My dear Emperor Kato, what a pleasant surprise. It must be quite late in New Beijing, about 2 hours and 24 minutes past midnight. Is that correct?
He swallowed his disgust as best he could and opened his hands wide to her.
Your Majesty, I beg you, please stop this attack. Please call off your soldiers.
The veil shifted as she listed her head to the side.
You beg me? How delightful. Do go on.
Heat flooded his face.
Innocent people are dying, women and children. Bystanders, people who haven't done anything to you. You've won and you know it. So please, end it now.
You say I've won, but what is my prize, young emperor?
Have you captured the cyborg girl who started all this?
She is the one you should be appealing to. If she turns herself over to me, then I will call off my men. That is my offer. Do let me know when you are prepared to bargain with me. Until then, good night.
Wait!
She folded her hands.
Yes?
His pulse thrummed painfully against his